This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always in studio by my good friends, my partner in sports radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we have lots to talk about today, but before we get into it, I want to talk about a company. I want to talk about a company that we both like, that we've been in a partnership with now for a few weeks. The company is VintageSports.com. I love all things vintage. I love all things sports. This company is the perfect melding of the two in that they have jerseys, caps, t-shirts, sweatshirts, baseball, football, boxing, basketball, anything that your vintage sports heart could desire, VintageSports.com can deliver. They sent us free gear, Pipe, because we're radio tycoons. And when you're a radio tycoon, people send you some stuff for free. And that's just part of the lifestyle. Pipe, it's not something that I expect everybody to understand, okay? And I'm not going to explain it to them necessarily what that feels like, but we got free gear. We both got baseball mitts. We both got caps. We're both thrilled with the gear that we got from Vintage Sports.
Yeah, we're both grown-up children.
Exactly.
Who like toys and hats.
Toys and hats. Keep the toys and hats coming. We really are, aren't we?
I have no guilt about this at all. My wife told me I was a grumpy old man with a child's sense of humor. I think I also have a child's sense of style and enjoyment when it comes to toys and hats as well.
Dude, I really, it's funny you mention that. I think about what I want in this world, which is very little. Like, I'm not one of these guys that sits around like dreaming about the next purchase, but the things that I want now are probably the same things that I wanted at 12. I do a little bit of shooting with my boys. Like, we have a couple of guns. We go shoot targets. And my dad got me a holster for Christmas, like an old-timey, like, cowboy holster. And I took this picture of me gleefully wearing the holster a couple days ago shooting. And I'm just like, I really am 12. There's probably, like, a child's picture.
Yes, I think I asked for, like, a cowboy, like, six shooter and holster setup every birthday from like age 6 until probably age 12 or 13.
And dude, when you got it, you were
at some
stoked.
Point I got too cool for it.
Yeah.
But I never stopped thinking it was cool.
Exactly. Because it never stopped being cool. Like, it's
right.
It's legitimately a cool thing, whether you're 12 or squarely in middle age. So this is, I think, the spirit that VintageSports.com is kind of hitting at, Pipe. It's for the 12-year-old and all of us. So navigate to their website, buy some of their stuff. They have autographed pictures, autographed memorabilia, boxing gloves. You'll be blown away by their customer service and their selection. Like, you will have barely placed the order, and then the box will show up at your front door. That's how efficient they are.
I was super caught off guard in a positive way by how their retro stuff doesn't just sort of like model after. Like, so I got one of the Ebbets Field flannel style baseball caps or flannel material, and it looks and feels like an old hat.
Yeah,
not just sort of like, oh, we took the logo off of an old hat and put it on a new one, and it looks like their shirts and jerseys are kind of the same thing. Like, they. If you want to dress like Babe Ruth or Jackie Robinson or Willie Mays or, like, I don't know, Fran Tarkenton, like, this is the company. It's that style of gear. It's really cool stuff.
I want to dress like all those guys. I want to be all those guys in their eras. that sounds phenomenal. And VintageSports.com will get you closer. So, Pipe, speaking of Babe Ruth, great two-way player. He was an elite pitcher. He was an elite hitter. Reminds me of somebody who's trending right now, Shohei Ohtani. I always want to call him the California Angels still, because I'm stuck in the past, but it's the Anaheim Angels.
Because you're still 12.
Because I'm still 12. Exactly. When I was 12, they were the California Angels. Now they are the Anaheim Angels. This guy, it's crazy how effective he is, both as a pitcher and as a hitter. Pipe, tell me your reactions to this player, and then I want to get into comps in baseball, comps in other sports, other walks of life.
Yeah, so I went through like multiple stages of fan cynicism when he came over. Probably, what was that, 3-4 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
And, you know, and I thought, well, this is like one of those guys who's drafted out of high school who's could be a star shortstop or could be a pitcher, and they just pick a direction. You know, he's got more promise as a hitter. He's got more promise as a pitcher. And I just assumed he'd probably be a pitcher because he'd had such pitching success. And there have been more pitching successes to come from Japan than there have hitting successes.
Right.
I mean, with the obvious exceptions of like Hideki Matsui and Ichiro. Mm-hmm. But and I just like, oh, he'll just be a decent pitcher. And it kind of looked like he was going that way. And then he blew his arm out. And what I realized over the last couple of years is that I ended up switching from cynicism to being like, oh, he'll find a niche, to I really want him to be the best player in baseball.
Yeah.
And this year, he is the best player in baseball. And he's not the best hitter, although he is currently tied for the league lead in home runs. He's not the best pitcher because the Jacob deGrom still exists.
Right.
But he's in the top three probably on both sides, and that hasn't been done since Babe Ruth. It's wild and so fun to watch.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, dude. And okay, I want to ask you some questions, and we haven't prepped this ahead of time because we don't do show prep of any kind. But what do you know, Pipe, about his background? Like, is he one of these guys who from like the cradle has been sort of engineered to be a baseball player? Because de rigueur here in America is, you know, you got your kid playing travel ball and playing 186 games a season by the time they're 4, you know. And it's sort of how we engineer baseball players here stateside. But I wondered, like, how this came to be, that someone could be that elite in those two phases of the game.
Well, I don't totally understand. I know that Japanese amateur baseball is a little bit like Texas high school football or Indiana high school basketball, in the sense like it's like this culturally woven thing.
Yeah.
And so the elite players at that level are not only celebrities, but like they're, you know, they're kind of counted on in their, you know, for their team's fandom and things. And I think he's just one of those rare generational athletes, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there's just not that many guys who can do what he does. Like, so he plays on the same team as Mike Trout, and Mike Trout is one of those generational players.
Right.
Like, you look at him and you're like, yeah, barring catastrophic injury, he's a for sure Hall of Famer.
Sure.
You know, Albert Pujols was one of those guys. Ken Griffey Jr. was one of those guys. Otani's like that. He just, maybe it's because he was allowed to do something that we don't allow people to do in the States.
Yeah.
Maybe in the States we force specialization too much. Mm-hmm. And maybe in Japan there's more openness to, you can throw 96 and you can hit the ball 450 feet. We'd like you to do both.
Yeah.
Whereas here it's like, well, we really think you should just throw 96. Because maybe if you just throw 96, then you'll throw 98.
Dude,
and that'll be better.
The logic kind of works. So if the line of logic says, if you're enough of a special, unique athlete to be able to throw 96... you're probably going to be able to hit pretty well too, because it takes a unique person to be able to throw 96 miles an hour, and you've probably got some like fast twitch muscle fibers in there that are pretty special. So whoever sort of groomed him or allowed that to happen at an early age, I mean, I think maybe there's something instructive in there for us, you know, because we tend to take an athlete and say, okay, if he's a kid who throws hard, or if he's a kid who can, you know, hit the stop sign with a snowball from 30 feet away or whatever, we immediately like make them do nothing but throw for the rest of their lives. And we sort of quiet whatever's in there that could be elite in other areas, you know. Whereas I think back in the Babe Ruth era, you know, you saw a special athlete and you were allowing them to be a special athlete all over the place, you know,
right?
Which is kind of a fun thing to think about, and it's fun when you see it, you know. And we in the age of specialization, we do see it less and less. But
so, where else could this work? Because I mean, so I think about, so let's take Jake DeGrom, who was, I think he was a shortstop in college, he was shortstop when he wasn't pitching, and he's, you know, he's one of the better hitting pitchers in baseball, which is a little bit like winning the tallest midget contest, you know, whatever. He can still hit some. And you know, what would have happened if all through the minors, they just, you know, he took regular batting practice. He invested in hitting, maybe not as much as pitching, but yeah. with, you know, maybe 30% as much.
Right.
Would he be like a 230 hitter with some power? Like yeah. that's a, who could, who's not a total drag on the end of their lineup. I don't know. It's just, it's a crazy thing. Or in football, you know, in high school football, the best players are almost always two-way players.
Dude,
or at least they
everything.
Were when I was
yeah.
growing up.
And they usually kick and punt.
I don't think that's true anymore. I think even those guys are specialists now. It's like, no, he just plays defensive end. And I'm like, well, he'd probably be a monster tight end too. Maybe we should try both. And
yeah.
that used to be a thing. Like what, I guess I'm curious what the psyche is that says, let's, at the age of 16, tell people what they need to do for the rest of their life instead of yeah. saying, oh, go be good at everything.
Dude, okay. So this is a huge question, Pipe. And I think it has import for like, the rest of society without like making too big a deal out of it. I mean, I think it's really, it speaks to the involvement of parents and it speaks to like, what's the end game of playing a sport? And yeah, I mean, 20, 30 years ago in high school, the end game was to win, right? So if you had a stud player, he was for sure playing both ways. He was probably kicking off. He was probably punting. Like these really elite athletes, you would see them everywhere on the field. And the idea was, let's put the ball in his hands or let's put him in high leverage situations as much as we can. And now dad is so hyper involved, leaning over against the fence in his stupid like Under Armour sweatsuit with his stupid sunglasses like backwards on the back of his neck, sort of waggling his finger at the coach at every opportunity. I mean, he's more worried about his kids, you know, huddle highlights and rivals page than he is, you know, anything that the team wants to accomplish. And I think there's a certain amount of purity in just, well, there's two points I want to make. One, as a parent, getting out of the way and letting the coach, you are going to run into some bad coaches, but that's just kind of, to me, all part of it. So getting out of the way yeah. is one point, but then like letting the team be the team. And I think nowadays you've just got a bunch of free agents, you know, like your kid plays on some travel team and the implicit promise in that is that he's going to get other opportunities when in fact, travel baseball is really just a thing that like ensures that you're not going to be in church for 2 months and you're going to be like $2,000 lighter at the end of it, you know, because yes. most of those kids aren't going anywhere. And if you spent any time around sports, you can watch an athlete for 10 minutes and say if they're going anywhere or not. I mean, it's really true. And, you know, the good ones are the good ones and you really can't put in what God left out.
Yeah, I think that's true. And it's interesting. There's actually been studies done on some of this, which of course have had no impact whatsoever on the rise of AAU and travel sports and whatever else.
Right.
But there's a book by David Epstein called Range, I think it was. Uh-huh. And it's basically, and the subtitle is Why Generalists Rule the World. Mm. And he looks at everything from like music to, you know, computer programming to whatever, but basically saying, if you learn to be a varied person,
yeah.
you know, so basically learn how to have skills and problem solve in a variety of ways, those things are transferable. And so in sports, guys like Roger Federer, so he kind of looks at like Federer versus Tiger Woods mm-hmm. and at one place where Federer played a bunch of different sports. Like tennis was not his thing until he was much older than, you know, your kind of typical elite tennis player who's at like 15 and yeah. in tennis school somewhere. But all of those other skills and athletic ability and body movements and everything transferred. And that's true for a lot of the elite athletes is that they were good at a bunch of different things. And then they kind of picked a specialty once they kind of like it kind of boiled down to that. They're like, oh, this is where I have the best opportunity. Or, oh, this is the one that I love.
Yeah.
You know, I think Steph Curry was like that. I think he played some baseball. He's a great golfer. Yeah. And now also the best shooter in the history of the world on the basketball court.
Dude, LeBron James, Allen Iverson, both elite yeah. high school football players.
Yep. And, to the point where if they had gone in football, now Iverson was small, so he might have struggled, but like they could have made a career for it because look at the kind of athlete they were.
Right.
You know, Michael Jordan in baseball. The fact that Michael Jordan hit over 200 in minor league baseball after not having swung a bat since high school or not having played competitively just shows kind of what the elite athlete can do crossing sports.
Totally.
And yeah, I just, I think there's another just psychological aspect where one of the things that I remember most, and I get this feeling, I'm almost 40, mm-hmm. and every upcoming season, I get this feeling still, which is the ache for the season to start.
Yeah.
For baseball, then football, then basketball, then back to right. baseball. Whereas if I just played baseball year round, like what am I ever anticipating?
Yeah, that's right.
Just the next tournament, just the next round with my hitting coach,
right.
you know, working off of a tee in some garage somewhere.
Dude, in some industrial complex somewhere. Yeah. I mean, it really takes the romance out of it. Like you have to miss something to be able to feel romantic about it. And I think that's what the natural ebb and flow of the season provides. And we're kind of robbing kids of that. Dude, we're rabbit trailing all over the place here a little bit, but do you see the whole like travel baseball pathology in your church where people are just disappear for like 2 months?
Not as much in our church. I think probably because of just generationally where we're at.
Yeah.
We have a huge number of kids who are like sub fifth grade
yeah.
and a smaller number of families with teenagers.
Sure.
I think if we trended more middle aged,
yeah.
which, you know, Lord willing, we will in a few years. Mm-hmm. We'll run into more of that. There's a little bit of it. You know, when I talk to our youth minister, he sees it some.
Sure.
But I've been at churches where that's like, yeah, there's kind of like an inhale, exhale of like, oh, it's travel baseball season. We just won't see certain kids for years. Or it's AAU yeah. basketball. We just won't see certain kids for months. In which, you know, so it's kind of like we just, when I worked with those youth groups, we just kind of treated those kids as if they weren't part of the youth group. They'd show up yeah. and we'd be like, oh, we know who you are. We know your family, but also you're a visitor.
Yeah.
Because we don't know who you are.
No, it's true. And it's amazing how quickly parents acquiesce to all that. You know what I mean? Like, oh, pay $3,000 and be out of the church for 2 months. I'm in. And it speaks to the like seductive nature of sports.
Yeah.
And it's crazy.
Yeah. And I think if you, I think most of those parents probably do not have a coherent, cohesive idea of what they're offering their kids.
Yeah.
Like they have a generalized sense of, we think we're doing what's best for our kids. But if you ask them, like, write out your five goals for your kid,
mm-hmm.
you know, what are you hoping to see them turn into?
Yeah.
And my guess is there would be sort of a record scratch, like herky jerky stop kind of, I don't know where any of this fits.
Right.
You know, principally we should be more involved in church and relationships, but also sports are my idol and yeah. I'm living vicariously through my kids and I don't know how to answer these questions.
Yeah. No, I know it. I know it. And there's a sense of like distortion in the heart there. And I think, you know, not to speak for our entire generation, but I think there have been some reasons why like the maturity level isn't there amongst people our age. And I think that's trickling down to their kids. And this coming on the heels of a discussion where we decided that all we want is a six shooter and a holster for Christmas. So maybe we're guilty of the same things, but
we're nothing if not inconsistent.
Exactly. Piper, speaking of athletes who are elite-ish in one sport, trying other sports, do we need to do like 2 minutes on the Tebow thing? Tebow getting signed by the Jags?
I think we must. We absolutely must.
Where are you at on that, man?
I have very mixed feelings because like at my gut level, I really dislike Tim Tebow.
Yeah, same.
And at the same time, it's really hard to dog a guy for finding a way to do the things he wants to do.
I know it. I know
it.
You
know?
Yeah.
And I have to have some modicum of respect for a guy who seems to succeed at everything he tries to some level.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if I don't even think he's good. Like, I don't think he was a good professional football player the first time. I don't think he was a good broadcaster.
Right.
I don't think he was a good minor league baseball player.
Mm-hmm.
But he was good enough.
Yeah, good enough to be there, which is elite, or
if he wasn't quite good enough, his name recognition closed the gap because it sold some tickets. And again, mm-hmm. like, okay, if you have monetary value, I guess go get it.
Yeah.
What bothered me the most about this was just the sheer football principle of this is what he should have done 12 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
He should have come into the league. given it 1 year at quarterback and been like, oh, I am not an NFL quarterback. You know what I am? I'm an NFL athlete.
Sure.
Who can play H-back, fullback, tight end. I don't think he plays a regular season snap this year.
No, there's a regulative kind of law of the jungle that takes over in football in a locker room where I think training camp is going to be an exercise in like getting his face ripped off by people. Like people are going to run through him. And for as good of an athlete as he is, and I doff the cap to him in terms of figuring out a way to get there. And at the end of the day, as much as we maybe don't like Tebow, like the kid loves football, you know, and I get it. Like I get it being hard to quit football. I've been trying to quit for 25 years and I can't. So I understand that, but you know, I do think it's going to be a rude awakening for him. Just things like putting your hand in the dirt, getting in a 3-point stance, trying to block people. Like those 9-on-7 drills are physical. Pass pro is physical. Like he's going to get,
and he's 33. Right. Like I realize he's been going easy on his body the last few years, but like 33, athleticism starts to slip. The 33-year-old NFL players who are elite are the guys who have mastered all of the other skills, the subtle skills. They're not the fastest, most explosive guys in the leagues anymore. They're still good athletes, obviously, but they're the technicians. Like, is he going to be a technician of any kind at tight end?
Well, the funny thing is, you just don't see his body type in the NFL anymore. I mean, if it was 1998. He would have been a fullback or an inside linebacker. I mean, the kid's like...
He'd have been like Frank Wycheck.
Dude, sure. He's like 6'2", 250. There were a bunch of guys like that in the league in 1998. But like tight ends now, they look like Darren Waller. I mean, they're tall. They're willowy. They're fast. They run 4'4", 4'5".
He ran like a 4.65, 4.7 coming out of college.
Right, which
means when he was at his athletic peak.
He's probably 4.85 now. He's really blocky. He's really stiff. He looks like a bodybuilder, you know, and you just don't like looking around the league. You don't see that body type on anyone. So it'll be weird and interesting to see if they use him, how they use him. If this was just a favor from Urban Meyer to him, it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact the Tebow traveling circus media thing has on Trevor Lawrence. You know, it's a weird deal to me. To kind of start your franchise over with a brand new coach and a brand new, like, you know, golden boy quarterback, and then 2 weeks later sign this, like, media freak show. It's bizarre.
I wonder, though, like, so Jacksonville, nobody could name a star player on Jacksonville other than Trevor Lawrence prior to the signing of Tim Tebow.
Right.
Which means that, And Lawrence was the number one overall pick. So all the pressure rested on him and Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Like that was it.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder if this is sort of a like the, you know, the prestige.
Yeah.
Where like they're trying to draw all the attention to this 33-year-old tight end media whore. And and let Lawrence just go figure out how to read a defense, how to go through his progressions, how to feel pressure, like just become an NFL quarterback. And honestly, I mean, Tebow has the reputation of being a genuinely good guy. So I wouldn't be surprised if he could offer some benefit to Lawrence. You know, I don't know what Trevor Lawrence wants or needs.
Yeah.
But if he wanted to go to him and say, hey, how do I deal with some of these difficult transition to professional life? And I could see Tebow being an asset in that way.
Yeah.
But to me, it seems like gamesmanship or... Urban Meyer there's sort of like an under the table kind of thing where it's like, hey, if this doesn't work out, we'll move you into the front office. We'll move you onto like a player development staff, kind of a you get to go that direction.
Yeah.
And stay close to the game, which I mean, would you be surprised if sometime during training camp, Tebow steps back and then they announce quietly that he's sort of joining the coaching staff or something along those lines?
Like, hey, my hamstring's not coming around, you know, but yeah, I'm the new director of player development, which is weird in light of like the Tebow Incorporated sort of brand that he's been shilling for the last decade. like you wonder what happens to all that, but alas, that is literally and figuratively above our pay grade, Pipe. But it will be interesting. And
I wish I wish it was only figuratively above our pay grade.
I know, dude. I wish the Happy Rant Incorporated brand was as big as Tebow Incorporated. You know, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, but then we'd have to be like Tim Tebow, and I don't know that either of us could stomach that.
Yeah, well, neither of us are that handsome or jacked or, quite frankly, boring. I think we're gradations more interesting than Tim Tebow.
Well, at the very least, we have opinions, which is not a thing that we've seen much from him. So,
dude, has there ever been someone that good looking with that little charisma? I mean, for the looks and charisma.
Yeah. Look at just European professional soccer stars across the board.
That's true.
Yeah. Bunch of really, really handsome, just mannequin personalities.
Dude, yeah, like elite looks there across the board. But yeah, like very remedial personalities. it's interesting. Yeah,
they avoid controversy by saying nothing of note, but yeah. You know. Yeah,
true.
Basically them.
Dude, Mike Lombardi had the greatest Tebow quote. This was a couple weeks ago on his podcast, right after Tebow got signed. Lombardi goes, if you taught that kid how to play the trombone, you know, he would demand a spot on the New York Philharmonic. You know, like it's like the kid he immediately wants to go to the top in whatever he's trying to do.
So sure, that's true. All people have to do is say no.
Exactly.
Like, you know, I guess I don't understand being mad at him.
Yeah.
If they offered him a contract, like maybe Jacksonville's the one we should all be mad at. Like, what is this gong show you're running?
Yeah.
But, or the New York Mets for letting him play baseball. Like they say no to people all the time.
Right.
Like they cut people. They tell people no. They tell better athletes than him no. So it's just, I guess I don't understand like why Lombardi was offended by it. Cause I'm like, well, he asked and they said yes. What's like, this is sort of a, well, what's the worst that could happen? You just keep asking.
Yeah. I mean, they were the gatekeepers. They had the ability to shut it down at whatever point they wanted to, but it'll be interesting. I mean, it'll be interesting to see if he even makes it to like the first preseason game and gets reps at tight end. I don't know. Football is infinitely interesting to me for so many reasons, but this will be another interesting thing to keep an eye on for sure. Were we done with Ohtani? I feel like we kind of got off track there.
I guess I don't know how much there is to say about him, and you know, unless we wanted to get into like nerd scouting, other than just calling attention to the fact that this has never happened since the 20s.
Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you this. From a marketing standpoint, and this comment or question is painted on the canvas of, there's been a lot of hand-wringing in baseball this year over like the strikeout rate and the low batting averages across the league. The fact that the game kind of goes through these ebbs and flows where, you know, offense will kind of go away for a little while and then they make tweaks to the rules and it kind of comes back. Do you think from a marketing standpoint, he moves the needle? Like, do you think this will help baseball? Do you think we'll see more of it? And what I'm getting at a little bit with that is, I think you and I are both at an age, and we've kind of been with baseball in some form or fashion long enough that like, I really don't care about those things. And I like baseball as a kind of self-regulating organism, so I'm not worried about it. But do you think baseball will try to capitalize on this pathology as a marketing thing moving forward?
No, because baseball sucks at capitalizing on anything good.
That is true.
I mean, it's the weakest point of Major League Baseball is not the game. It's not the time of the game. It's not what, it's the fact that there are 25 captivating players. Mm-hmm. Like, they're captivating to watch. Some of them are fantastically interesting people. Some of them are like 22. Some of them are 38.
Yeah.
And nobody know, like, you wouldn't know Fernando Tatis Jr. if you walked by him in the grocery store.
I would, because
he's the most exciting player in baseball not named Ohtani.
He just killed my team for a week, so I would know him.
Yeah,
unfortunately,
he's fascinating.
Yeah,
and so no, baseball's absolutely not going to do anything with this because they need like Adam Silver to come over from the NBA and show them how to just market the crap out of all of their assets,
all of their interesting people.
It is still run like a bank in the 1950s. You know, just like, if we build it, they will come. We're rich. Nobody can tell us what to do.
Yeah.
They just miss all the opportunities. And it's baffling to me, because like, Mike Trout should be as loved as, like, you know, Willie Mays was.
Sure.
And Ohtani is doing something that hasn't been done in 100 years. And Fernando Tatis Jr. and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Talk about that. He's the best hitter in baseball this year, and his dad was a Hall of Famer. Like, yeah. This is a cool story.
Yeah.
Like, do you remember, I'm sure you remember, when Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. shared an outfield for, like, part of a season?
Dude, absolutely.
Like, this is that level of cool, yeah. What Vlad Jr. is doing. And baseball's just like, okay.
Dude.
You know?
So,
like, Come and watch, everybody, like, it exists. I think they're still following the field of dreams. If we build it, they will come, which is not how anything works anymore. Nothing works that way, baseball.
Yeah, I want to, that's a great point. And I want to follow it up with another question. I actually think they've gotten worse at this, because, dude, I'm thinking again about being 12, right? So we're going back to that motif. And I'm just even thinking about, like, the posters that I had and the posters that my buddy Mitch Warner had. He was a little bigger of a baseball guy than me. Shout out Mitch Warner. But, like, dude, our rooms were covered with posters of, like, Ken Griffey and Barry Larkin and, like, Jose Canseco.
Yes.
And I could name, like, a dozen cool guys from the late 80s, early 90s that we were into, that baseball, like, did at least a serviceable job at marketing and telling the stories of. And I can't do that anymore. Like, I think they've actually regressed. I think that the needle has moved back. And my question
is... I don't know that baseball has regressed as much as it is doing the exact same things now that it did in 1984 and 1996.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, the internet didn't exist then.
Yeah.
And so, where every other league has figured out how to... the NFL is a little different, because they basically just realized, like, as a sport, they kind of rule society.
Yeah.
Basketball has learned how to market its stars.
Mm-hmm.
And soccer kind of marketing stars, but then there's still club loyalty. They're kind of worldwide. They're like the NBA combined with the NFL in terms of how well they do this.
Yeah.
And baseball is still just muddling along, and has, like, they just haven't realized how to do anything. So they haven't changed.
Yeah.
So they're not doing anything worse, I don't think. It's just everybody else has sprinted away from them in terms of trying different things and getting different TV packages and, like, all of this stuff. And baseball's still just mucking it up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. That's a great point. How are the Twins, Pipe?
Oh, speaking of mucking it up, they, as of today, are no longer the worst team in baseball by record. Or maybe it was a couple days ago.
Uh-huh.
They had the worst record in baseball. Then they've won, I think, 5 out of their last 6 at the time of this recording.
Well, there you
and
go.
They couldn't get out of their own way for the first month and a half of the season. Just, I think there's something like 1-11 in extra inning games.
Mm-hmm.
Their bullpen, it got to the point where I watch games pretty regularly. And anytime they would be holding a slight lead going into the 8th or 9th innings, I just was like, oh, the bullpen's 100% going to blow this. And then sure enough, it's like single, error, single, single, and they're down by 2 runs.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just was constant. So they, I think they still have a fighting chance to get back into playoff contention,
mm-hmm.
but it's going to take, like, they're going to have to play at this level for the remainder of the season, because the White Sox are still pretty good. The Indians are not horrendous. I think at this point they'd be fighting for a wild card spot if they play exceptional baseball for the next, 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah. Our fortunes have been similar, with the Mariners, in that we had a pretty torrid start. There was a lot of reason for optimism, and then we kind of cratered there, for the last couple of weeks. And, we took the last two nights we've beaten Oakland. So that's been encouraging. Pitching has been good. Starting pitching has been good. Here's sort of a snapshot of my experience with the Mariners, at multiple points this season. So starting pitcher, let's say it's Justin Dunn, pitches 5.5 innings. It's a masterpiece, right? Maybe he's got like a one hitter going. This happened the other night, which is why I'm so specific about it. So we hit the magic ethereal pitch count, decide that Justin Dunn's night has to be over, even though he's on fire. We pull him out. We bring in some guy from the pen. He gets lit up to the tune of like six runs in the first inning that he's in, and we lose 9-2. That to me, and maybe this is a broader discussion about analytics and what kind of role they should play in the lives of professional baseball teams, but I feel like we've been bitten by the analytics thing a lot this year. And I don't know what kind of impact over the entire course of the season it would have on his arm to keep him in for another couple innings, but, and I'm sure they've done the math and they know more than me, but there's a thing about an athlete playing great and the team responding to the athlete playing great that is kind of magical, that isn't captured in analytics. And if you're just trying to win every night, maybe you let the guy go a little bit more. Have you seen this on the Twins? And this is something you get from like having the MLB package and watching a little bit of your team every night.
Yeah, somewhat. I think the Twins are probably in a different spot because they don't have a lot of like prospect players in their, especially not in their rotation right now. So like these guys have a proven track record of what they can and can't do. So like when Michael Pineda is pitching, you're very likely to get 5 to 6 very good innings out of him. But if he has to go through the lineup a third time while he's also climbing into that 95 to 110 pitch count, he's probably going to get hammered.
Sure.
Or he's going to lose his command and those kinds of things. Jose Berríos, same thing, has a tendency to like go 4 innings where he looks like, you know, one of the top 5 pitchers in baseball. And then that 5th and 6th inning, it's like, oh, here we go. Walks 2 guys, gives up a double. Like the third time through the lineup is kind of a nightmare. But I do struggle with what you're talking about from a fan perspective when it's a young pitcher.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, the guy has 18 career innings. We don't know what he's good at.
Sure.
Also, he doesn't know what he's good at, and we don't know what his progression is. So maybe giving him a chance to grind through those that next time through the lineup is gonna be beneficial. Or maybe it's gonna be beneficial in July, even if it's not now.
Sure.
So yeah, I see it some with the Twins. The thing that bugs me about the Twins when it comes to the analytics is all the analytics show that having a high-end bullpen, you know, so where you can bring in a new high-powered arm every inning after the 5th or 6th is a pretty effective way to win.
Yeah.
Well, the Twins just don't have those arms.
Yeah.
Like, I watch other teams, and they're just rolling guys out there who are throwing, like, 97 with ridiculous movement for the 6th inning, 7th inning, 8th inning, 9th inning. And the Twins have, like, 2 of those guys, and then a bunch of, like, lefties who throw 91. And I'm like, well, this is the same crap we tried, you know, like after the lockout season in 95, you know, come on guys, like they're still running out there, like pitch to contact junk out of their bullpen. Mm-hmm. And that drives me crazy. Like that's just bad. It's understanding analytics and not having the talent to match.
Yeah, no, that's a great point for sure. Pipe, do we have like 5 minutes to talk some NBA playoffs? And by talk some NBA playoffs, I mean, I will ask you about it because due to the NFL draft and baseball happening, I haven't thought about the NBA in like 2 months. So what's going on? What's going on in the NBA? Does anybody care? This is my annual, like, does anybody care conversation about the NBA?
It feels weird this year because they, you know, they started the season late. They crammed, I think, a 75-game regular season with only a few hiccups along the way.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a massive disaster.
Yeah.
But it means that the playoffs started late. So like it's almost June at the time of this recording.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just barely into the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Which normally this is like conference finals time.
Sure.
So which means that like, yeah, the arc of interest for guys like me ended.
Mm-hmm.
And normally the playoffs are when that picks up again. It's like, okay, I slogged through the regular season. Now I'm just like, yeah, I kind of don't care.
Yeah.
But where things are, I would venture to say that I think the Nets are probably the presumptive favorites right now because they have Kyrie, Durant, and Harden. And it's hard to imagine anybody stopping them.
Let me ask you a question about that trifecta and that team. Does anybody like them? Like, is anybody like...
No.
Yeah, that was my question.
They don't even like each other.
They don't like each other. Nobody likes them. Like, has there ever been a less likable trifecta of, like, NBA stars on one team?
Well, it's not... Yeah, it's that plus the fact that they're playing for a team that doesn't really have a home fan base. Right. Because they were the New Jersey Nets, who at least had, like...
Yeah.
They're like angry New Jersey fandom who they weren't big, but they were, right. They were loyal. They'd been around since the ABA days, et cetera. Yeah. Then they moved to Brooklyn. And so it's like, well, they're way better than the Knicks, or at least they have been, right. But also they're not, no native New Yorker likes them.
Right.
And the Brooklyn hipsters are probably not big basketball fans. So they don't really have a home fan base. Two of the three stars on their team are, I would say, two of the three least likable players in the NBA. I should say two of the least likable players in the NBA, because nobody likes Kyrie and nobody likes Harden.
Yeah.
And Durant is, he's enigmatic. Like, personality, nobody knows what to do with him. But also probably one of the, he's an all-time elite player and scorer. Just a rare talent.
Right.
But yeah, nobody likes them. And so if they win, it's going to feel very kind of anticlimactic, because it's, if they don't win, it's like they failed. If they do win, it's like, well, of course they won.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to be happy. And it's going to feel a little bit like a purchased title.
Sure.
You know, where...
Yeah.
Because none of that was homegrown talent. All of it was kind of bought, traded for, you know, whatever. And it kind of feels like the most mercenary way to go about it. You know, a little bit like... I mean, it doesn't even compare. I was going to compare it to like the Yankees of the early 2000s, but I was like, actually, a bunch of their players kind of came up through their system.
You know? It's true. Or and the Yankees have always had this, like, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, this fiercely loyal, kind of locally homegrown fan base where, yeah, they're a global brand. They're a little bit like the Dallas Cowboys, but there's always been like a close to home aspect of the Yankees whereas. Yeah, this Brooklyn thing, it's like they're kind of emblematic of the modern sort of disconnected social media era where, like, it doesn't really exist. You know what I mean? Like, nobody really cares, but it exists kind of only on the internet. And, yeah, it's sad in that way. Like, I remember as a kid, dude, like, so my family's from Chicago, and all those Bulls championships, like, for weeks... Before and after the NBA Finals, you couldn't drive anywhere in the Chicago area without like somebody selling like Bulls t-shirts on the street corner. And you'd drive up to these like folding tables and little tents, and everybody's selling like this unlicensed Bulls merchandise. And the feeling was, gosh, that's illegal, but also like that's cool. You know, like everybody cares about this, and everybody's walking around in Bulls t-shirts. And there was this huge sense of they're ours, you know, they're local, and like no one's going to care in Brooklyn, you know, like a Brooklyn hipster isn't going to wear a Nets t-shirt unless it's ironic, you know, the whole thing just hits at a sad level to me.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it is there's a shift in, so the Bulls were always Chicago's team, you know, the Bears were Chicago's team. Mm-hmm. In New York, like the Mets and the Yankees have real fan bases. Yeah. Like, yes, the Yankees are kind of the evil empire, but like they have people who have rooted for them generation over generation over generation. Sure. And that kind of thing. Same with like the Twins, you know, mm-hmm. the more local, regional kind of team.
Yeah.
The NBA has lost most of that.
Yeah.
It's a stars-based league. And I go back and forth on whether it's a plus or minus, but
yeah,
almost anybody under the age of like 28 roots for players, not teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they root for they're following their, if Steph Curry was to leave the Warriors, they're going to go be a fan of like whatever team he lands on, Miami or whatever.
Right.
And so Brooklyn, The problem that Brooklyn has is that A, they didn't have a loyal fan base, and B, nobody likes those players. So they didn't gain either of those things. Like the Lakers gained a bunch of fans when LeBron went over.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if LeBron leaves, they're going to lose a bunch of those fans because he's going to go to wherever, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, the Nets don't have any of that.
Yeah.
And so then, and you get other teams like, so let's look at the Eastern Conference. Like I think the Sixers were the number one seed, I think. And like Nobody's really a Joel Embiid fan.
Right, right.
Other than like analytics guys.
Yeah.
Nobody's really a Ben Simmons fan.
Yeah.
But Philly matters because Philly fans have been Philly fans for forever. You know?
Yeah.
Like they have a real fan base. So that if the Sixers went and won a title, which I don't think they'll have a shot to do, that would be a story.
Right, right.
You know, coming out of the West, like Phoenix was, you know, the number two seed. And so say they came out, like they got Chris Paul, they got DeAndre, and they got Devin Booker. It's a small, but like, I think it'd be more of a story because like the Suns have been sort of languishing there for 40 years or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's just this weird mix of like a few loyal fan bases and then a bunch of people who follow stars. And then you get some of these teams who lack both of those things.
Dude,
you know,
I think there's a real scarcity of likable players right now. Like there's a real crater of that in that, like, I couldn't name five guys in the NBA who I like, you know, who I like the personality of, and I like watching them play. And it well, speaks.
Let me push back on that a little bit. There have never been likable players in the NBA. It's just that we used to not know enough about guys that we were still allowed to like them.
Dude, that's a very good point.
Michael Jordan is the least likable player in the history of the NBA, and we all loved
him. That's true. We all loved him. We were all
convinced
that he was amazing.
Sean Kemp was a terrible person. Gary Payton was, you know, like all of these guys who were like, oh man, I love this guy.
We were
like, if they had social media, we would have hated them.
Yes, we would have. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. But I think, and maybe I'm just viewing the past through rose-colored glasses here. In fact, I'm sure that's what I'm doing. But like when I think about Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, not to mention Jordan, I mean, he's the ultimate example of this. But there were things about their games that made them as individuals fun to watch. You know what I mean? Like you were going to get some incredible like in-game dunking from Sean Kemp. And you were going to get some incredible like chippy trash talk defense. Like the whole Gary Payton experience was like a thing. And I don't know, they were sort of brands in and of themselves in kind of a pre-marketing age. You know, the league was just kind of starting to do marketing of stars back then. And those guys kind of rose to the top on their own merits. And I think now we're inundated with marketing. We're inundated with social media. We get too much of these guys. I think it's just sort of like guy fatigue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, LeBron James,
face fatigue.
Yeah, like, just shut up. Don't tweet. You know, don't do anything for like 2 weeks. Let me miss you, you know? And
that's totally true because we also have felt the freedom now to go digging into people's personal lives. So, like, mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard would have been such a delightful 90s star.
Yes.
Because he's got an unusual game. Mm-hmm. He's ridiculously good, and he never says anything.
Yeah.
Well, now people are like trying to do behind the scenes stories about his life and where did this guy come? And like in the 90s, it would have just been like, he's the quiet assassin type,
right,
you know, watch out for that guy. But like nobody really knows him. And he would have gotten some nickname like the ninja or something. And
it
totally would have worked.
It would have.
Whereas now it's like, well, we don't like him because we don't know anything about him. And then you get guys like Steph Curry and it's like, well, we don't like him because we know too much about him.
Exactly.
Like, well, nobody can win anymore because we're now too inundated with the person part of it. I think what we're getting at is that we liked sports before they were human.
Yeah.
It was, you know, we liked the athletes as athletes and we did not care about them as people.
And I still don't. And that sounds terrible,
yes,
but
correct.
Like, I only have the capacity to care about like 10 to 12 people as people. And everybody else, like, I really don't care, you know, like, I mean, family, my kids, my close friends, you know, some people in my church, I care about them as people. I really do. But like, I do not care about LeBron James or Kyrie Irving as people. I just can't. I don't have the bandwidth, you know?
Well, there's sort of a categorical care where it's like, yeah, we want to be decent and think, I hope their life is good. I hope their marriages are good. I hope they're great dads. I hope they're mentally healthy.
Yeah.
But also, I don't want to read anything about any of that stuff. I just want to see passes and dunks and shots and running an offense and winning games and like the sports side of it. Like that's why these guys hold a place in my mental energy.
Yeah, 100%. And I think I think too, there's another thing at play here, and we're hitting on all these big topics that could be episodes in and of themselves. But I think because of social media and the modern era, there's a natural sort of skepticism that comes with fame. Whereas I think 20, 25 years ago, somebody became famous, you recognized them as famous, you were kind of generally interested and intrigued, but you weren't really doing the cynical thing. Whereas now, yeah. like even in the church, dude, even like church, especially in church circles, somebody gets famous and I'm like rolling my eyes and I'm like, ah, who did he kiss up to for 5 years on the road? And what, you know, like who's his nephew, you know what I mean? Or who's his uncle?
Yes.
Yeah. There's this kind of like eye rolling and sigh that comes with, okay, you know, what church growth leadership consultant dirtbag did you hire to like get famous, you know? And it's too bad. It actually makes me sad that that's how I feel.
Yeah, fame has become a, you know, like growing up, there would be like the fishing opener, the deer season opener, the whatever. Yeah. Now it's like fame is the opener. You know,
yeah.
you reach a certain threshold of fame and it's like, well, open season on you.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And it also, there's almost a guarantee like peak and valley of interest and following and then turning against. We sure. saw it with... Seen it with LeBron multiple times, seen it with Steph Curry. Mm-hmm. You even saw it with Kevin Durant. Like Kevin Durant in Oklahoma was like, in Oklahoma City was the next, you know, Dr. J or whatever. And then he left for Golden State and it's like, oh, we turned against him.
Yeah.
You know, now he's in that in-between place. So there's fame is no longer just sort of a neutral, people are aware of you. It's now mm-hmm. a... people are for you or against you, and they will turn against you in time, probably.
Sure. Yeah, that's so true. Which is why it's probably for the best, Pipe, that we're never going to get super, super famous. But I've enjoyed this, man. This has been a good hour of sports radio. Pipe, we've done what we always do, in that we've rabbit trailed a little bit, but we've basically hit the topics that we endeavored to hit.
Basically.
And until next time, check out vintagesports.com. And that's it. I kind of stepped on my until next time thing. Until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Dear Heavenly Father, thank you for working everything out for my good. Help me trust in your perfect plan. Amen.
Father, thank you for loving and caring for me.
With Christian prayer meditation, you can pray along to prayers based on specific topics. Go to lifeaudio.com or search your favorite podcast app for Christian prayer meditation. You can also download the Abide app for biblical meditations at abide.com.